Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance. Trump.
To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate it.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I've got people visiting that are from a very hot part of the country. My brother and his family live in Central California, where it is 108 degrees today in their hometown. And so I feel kind of guilty as an Oregonian. I'm driving around with my air conditioning on when it's like 78. I have been wussified by the climate here and living here. In our house, we have our air conditioning on and we've got it set at a like cool 68 or 69. And I asked my brother, like, what do they have their thermostat set at their house? And he's like 78 or whatever. And so they're all wearing sweaters at my house where they're staying over. The kids are all freezing. I'm apologizing today because I told him it could be hot today. And the kids in the household are like, oh, yeah. And I go, it might be 86 today. I'm paying special attention to the weather next week in particular because Camp Exceptional happens next week. And for people listening on Fox Sports Eugene and Eugene on 1050 AM and 95.7 FM, you will soon probably learn a lot about the BFT Foundation. You're part of it. I'm sorry, but you're roped into it. If you listen to the show, you're part of the foundation. And the foundation helps kids in art, music, education, and athletics. It puts on a summer camp, sends classrooms on field trips. And if you've got a need, go to baldfacetruth.org and apply for a grant by all means. And if you have the means and you want to help out, this is a 501c3 that you get tax-deductible donations for making donations for, and you can literally go to the website, baldfacetruth.org, and you can give if you'd like. I'm not going to harass you with it. I'm just going to throw that out there. I have pulled in Jim Ferretti, who works in Portland on the sister station on KXL. I forget how you say it. KXL, what is it?
FM News 101 KXL.
FM News. So the branding there is that you're on the FM.
That's right.
We're also on the FM, by the way.
Yes, you are.
We don't go around going, oh, we're on the FM. Oh, wait, we do.
Well, you know, it's pretty odd. You know, 5 years ago is when we made the switch to FM. Yeah.
What does it mean when you're on FM versus AM? Is that supposed to mean you're cooler and younger? Or
absolutely.
What?
You know, that's so funny. About 4 or 5 years ago, I walked by our sister station here, in one of the music stations. I said, oh, and they're out there playing mini golf in the hallway. I said, oh, man, it must be cool to be on FM radio. I thought to myself, wait a minute, I'm on FM radio.
Yeah, you're a cool guy. You got your start. Did you get your start in this state, on this show, on this station? Or what point of your career did you join this show?
In between my careers. How about that?
Yeah,
I was on your show filling in for a while, and then I left again when my daughter was born, and then I came back full-time with KXL.
What was I like to work for and with?
God, you're a jerk.
Really?
No.
Come on.
No.
You're a professional. Although your wife should have given birth on air.
She should have. We should have taped the whole black, the black sheets up and everything. Yeah, that would have been great.
You did not go for that. I thought it would be really cool.
I was going for it. We called her up. She said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt really bad about that.
That's kind of where we went sideways. What was it like to work on the show?
It was fun. I had a blast on this show because I follow sports, but I'm not really in deep with what's going on. So hearing what you have to say, what the callers have to say, and what the experts you bring on have to say really got me thinking a lot more about what's going on in the local area.
There you go. All right. I dragged you in here because we were in the hallway just a few minutes ago, and you started to have a conversation with me that I thought would be a better conversation to have on air.
Well, you walked by my cube and said, hey, are you excited for next week? And of course, that's Camp Exceptional. Of course, yeah. I'm excited because I'm going to be there. But what's more exciting is my daughter, Lily, is so excited about it. She has talked about it each week leading up to it. Okay, is it Camp Exceptional week? Because she's right now in a YMCA camp all summer long and doing, because mom and I both work during the day. So she is so super excited. And I think what she's most super excited about is the last day.
Yeah.
The fire truck.
Yeah, the fire truck.
She's super excited about that.
I got to give a shout out to Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. They do a great job at the camp being present and also blasting the kids with the fire hose at some point of the week every week. The fire truck pulls up and about half the kids, we ran the numbers last night. About 45% of the camp is new every year.
Is it really?
Wow. Interesting that 45% of new campers come in every year. But it's the 55% when they see the fire truck. They know what's going on.
Right.
They've dressed for the occasion. It's hot. Like I said, it's scorching hot at like 86.
Right.
And the kids go running around. And the fire department gets a great opportunity to practice, shooting the hoses off.
You know, your brother is going to be in a long sleeve shirt and long pants Monday morning, right?
Right. He will be.
The rest of us will be in shorts and t-shirts.
For people who don't know, Camp Exceptional is the summer camp that the foundation runs that in conjunction with Todd Jacobs and my brother Ben, who come up from California. They're adapted PE specialists. They have put together a curriculum for the week. It's a sports camp. There's buy-in from the Winterhawks and the Timbers and the Hillsboro Hops and they teach them sports, and Portland State helps out, and Clackamas Community College helps out, and there's a lot of young volunteers who are out there working with kids. Your daughter, Lily, participates. How old is Lily?
She's 8, will be 9 in October.
So that's how long ago you were working on the show.
Yeah.
8 and 9 years ago.
Yeah, can you believe you've been on the radio that long?
No.
Can you believe you lasted that long?
I thought it was going to be about a week that I would last. I said, this show will last 1 week, but it will be a magnificent week of radio. And it has just continued. I remember because we did try to have your wife have the baby on air.
We did. We called her up and we told her we'd put plastic sheets all over the walls. No one could see in.
Drape it down and live birth on air. Lily, as it turns out, was born with a heart condition.
She was. She was born with a heart condition. A lot of people know the story. She's had 3 open heart surgeries, first at 9 days old, second at 4 months old, third at 3 years old. She's doing pretty well now. She's on a lot of medications. Most likely, we don't know what the future holds. I mean, it could be anything, but things like Camp Exceptional give her the chance to be normal. She leads a pretty normal life as it is, except for the medications. She has to slow down at times and relax. The sun gets to her. But seeing her last year at Camp Exceptional, running the track, the parachute run, I think was the greatest thing. It's one of my favorite pictures. She's got this big old smile on her face because she's doing what other kids are doing. And, I did a lot of interviews when I was there last year, and I talked to a lot of parents, and that was their main thought behind my questioning was, what was this like? It's so inclusional. You don't know who has a medical issue. You don't know who has a developmental issue or anything like that. These kids all work together. Your daughter does an amazing job with these children.
I think she's just a child herself. I think she gets as much out of it as anybody, because I think I had a kid in my class in junior high that had cerebral palsy. It was the first time that I'd ever been around anybody who was really different. The kids at that time, different than today, I think in a lot of places, the kids at that time were sent off to their own classroom and they had aides that work with them. And then all of a sudden Glenn was in the classroom with us and he had cerebral palsy and he was in a wheelchair. And it was the first time I was introduced to, like, okay, what are his strengths and weaknesses? What can he do and can't he do? And he didn't present very well, so you assumed, oh, he doesn't know what's going on or whatever. And then you come to find out, like, Glenn is alive in there, and Glenn's got a personality, and he's funny. And so I think this gives a chance for kids who are, like, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old to get that much earlier and find out, hey, this kid has strengths and weaknesses just like me.
I remember there was one mom I spoke to last year who had two kids in the camp, two boys. They were like a year apart, and one was a typical kid, as we call them, and one had special needs, and I don't remember exactly what it was. And I asked her, what does your son, your typical son, get out of this? She told me, he gets more out of this than my other son does, because it shows him that everyone can do something, everyone can be part of this, and everyone can have fun.
My favorite part is the first day of the camp, when they are first introduced to each other, and they're kind of feeling each other out in the groups. And they realize they're going to be stuck with each other all week, and they're going to have to figure out how to work together. And then comes like a team building exercise where they have to solve a problem together.
Yeah.
And then it's like watching five scientists from five different continents and language barriers, and you know, and you watch the kids try to figure this out. By the end of the week, they have figured it out. Like right. By the end of the week, they are a machine together. But it's that first day where they're like kind of looking at each other. You know, there was one kid 2 years ago who didn't talk. He was very shy. And his dad just said, my kid's really shy. I would like for him to come to the camp and maybe he'll make a friend or whatever. By the end of the week, he was outgoing and bubbly and he signed up for the next year. And so it's been those kinds of experiences. But I wanted you to tell your story because so Lily's looking forward to the camp.
She is. She is so excited about it. I'm excited about it. I took the week off for vacation. I mean, last year I got to come and drop her off, watch for an hour, then I had to go to work. I said, you know, this year I'm taking the vacation because I want to see what happens the entire time. So I look forward to being out there. But yeah, we're both really excited about the whole thing.
My youngest sister was kind of, every year, so my whole family comes up and volunteers. So you look around, you'll see like my mom and dad, my mom's a nurse who's retired and she's over there working in the first aid station. And so my youngest sister, who we kind of put her in charge of water last year.
I remember her.
So she was in the water station. So this year, my sister said, you know what? I kind of think I want a promotion from water. Like, so we decided she's in charge of hydration this year instead of water.
You gave her the Powerade too?
Yeah, we said, we're promoting you to hydration over water. And so we're just going to put hydration over it and see how long till she notices she has the same damn job she had last year.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I get there on Monday, I'll look her up and I will help her out.
Yeah, sure. You know, you got the hydration station, not the water station. All right, we'll see you out there,
all
Jim
right,
Freddy.
Buddy.
Sister Station FM News.
101 KXL.
We're on FM and we've got news, is what they're saying over at the sister station. We've got a great radio show for you today. Darren Revelle will be joining us. ESPN business reporter, who is, I think, the most interesting follow on Twitter when it comes to sports and business. He knows what's going on. He's got a weird fetish and fascination and hobby, though, with collecting canceled checks. He collects canceled checks from famous people. I didn't know that this existed. Like, maybe you traded baseball cards. Maybe you collect bobblehead dolls. Maybe you're into, like, selfies or whatever. He collects canceled checks from like famous transactions. We're going to talk to him about that, plus a couple of other newsworthy things, including Major League Baseball's push to make the All-Star Weekend and the Home Run Derby contest better and more interesting than the game itself. Darren Revelle will be with us. And Austin Meek, columnist at the Eugene Register Guard, will be joining us as we take a foray towards college football. The Ducks start practice next week. In college football. Next week, like the summer's over. If you're a college football player, it's next week that they go to work, really. And a lot of them have been working to this point. Plus, we're giving away Mariners tickets on today's show, so I want you part of that. But as long as we're talking about weird and odd, I guess, hobbies or fetishes when it comes to collecting things, tell me what you collect. Tell me what you keep as a sports fan. Like Darren Revelle, he's got checks that are canceled. And he's really mad at me because he knows that I had an eBay transaction with Bill Belichick, the Patriots coach. And Bill Belichick sent me a check for $48. He's telling me I was nuts to cash the check, that I should have just framed the check and kept it, and I'd have this check from Bill Belichick forever. I wanted the $48. I didn't know Belichick would go on to win all those Super Bowls, and he was then a coordinator with the New York Jets, in my defense. But I do have the envelope. So what do you keep and what do you collect? 503-417-7575. Tell me what it is as a sports fan that you collect, and what do you keep? I have ticket stubs that I've kept all these years from all these random and meaningless baseball games that the San Francisco Giants played in like the early 1980s to the mid-1980s. I've got the ticket stubs. I save them. I collect them. I guess. I also keep game programs probably longer than I should. For those of you out there who keep a game program, you know that the resale, I guess, secondary market after you get a game program, even a Super Bowl game program, is not that strong. So a lot of times I think we're just collecting these things to say, hey, I was at that event. I was there. I was present. I was part of that. So what do you collect? I have two Croyda Candlestick pins from my time at Candlestick Park as a Giants fan, seeing extra inning Giants games. I've kept those things. Anytime I run in a race, if it's a 5K race or a 3K race with the kid, she likes to run, I keep the racing bib. I have it on a wall in a room in my house to prove that I can run, apparently. 503-417-7575. What do you collect? What are you into? I know a newspaper colleague who collects shot glasses of places she's never been. It's true. People bring her shot glasses from trips they take and bring them back to her. And I'm like, well, that is a weird hobby. Like, so if you travel somewhere and you have that shot glass, you have to get rid of it out of your collection. So it's shot glasses from places she's never been. What do you collect? You can tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me what it is that you collect, or you can call into the radio show and we can talk about it. Lonzo Ball, by the way, is tearing it up. We're going to talk more with Darren Revell of ESPN as the business reporter about Lonzo Ball's future as an endorser. Has he made a mistake by not negotiating a sneaker deal? Or is he positioned as a Los Angeles Laker point guard that might be the best damn Lakers point guard since when? Best young point guard since probably Magic Johnson, right? Most promising. But let's not forget Gary Payton in a Lakers uniform. Let's not forget Nick Van Exel in a Lakers uniform. There have been some good Laker guards even during lean times. Darren Revell will talk about that coming up. Plus, the Pablo Sandoval era in Boston is over. He's been designated for assignment, the Red Sox announce. It terminates the worst, maybe one of the worst, free agent signings in franchise history. They will owe him $49 million through the end of 2019. Boston has 10 days to either trade him or release him. And what a fall for Giants fans who are celebrating everywhere. What a fall for Pablo Sandoval, who goes deep, deep, deep in a World Series game, wins a second ring, says, I'm going to take the money, and then ends up as like this fall from grace that, you know, he's been designated for assignment. It's terrible. Meanwhile, Tim Tebow, by the way, he's got a walk-off home run yesterday. That gives him more minor league home runs than Danny Ainge and Russell Wilson and John Elway and Michael Jordan. What company is that? We'll talk to Darren Revell about it next.
More with John Canzano, the bald-faced truth.
I just told Gliss, the producer of the show, let's go big with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather stuff. Maybe starting next week or certainly the week after. Darren Revell, who I think is the best talking sports and business together in the same sentence, the best that I have seen do it and heard do it, is joining us now, ESPN sports business reporter. Where are you today, Darren Revell?
Oh, I'm actually back home in New Jersey after I actually took an hour nap, which was probably, I do a nap maybe twice a year. That's how exhausted I am from this week. But
and, yeah,
I'm back in New Jersey.
Why this week more than other weeks do you need a nap?
I just did, the travel wasn't that great. Didn't work out well for me. I did MLB All-Star. I feel like the heat in Miami pounded me. I was walking around in a suit for a day and a half. And it didn't help, by the way. I know this is first world problems. I'd never take to Twitter on it. But, you know, the fact that the Marlins ownership doesn't care about anything. And, like, you know, they let you in at 2 p.m. day of All-Star game. And it's like 110 degrees with the heat index. And it's like, it says no drinks until 4 o'clock. And you get in at 2 o'clock. And you're like, what? You can't turn on the soda fountain for me? So I think, you know, between that and then just been a busy day yesterday in the city and waiting for Mayweather-McGregor, you know, just everything. I got home at midnight, 1 o'clock, woke up at 4:50. So, you know, just busy.
Let's start with Mayweather-McGregor because I think it's interesting. What is this going to do for boxing? What does this do for sports, this event?
Nothing for boxing and nothing for the MMA, for UFC. I really don't. I mean, this is likely going to be a spectacle. I don't think that Conor's going to try anything crazy, though. Just the fact that he has to essentially untrain himself not to kick when he punches—that's like the most intriguing thing to me. I mean, are you going to put a weight in your shoe? It's very and they did confirm yesterday. Steven Espinosa of Showtime did say that there would be a very significant financial penalty, you know, if he tried anything, any type of move that's a non-boxing move. And I think Dana White said that, you know, even though Mayweather's at the end of his career, he would just be basically sued if he did anything crazy by Mayweather. So I think this is a spectacle. I think it is going to break the pay-per-view record from Mayweather-Pacquiao. I think it's going to tie or break the gate record. I think it's going to break the boxing sponsorship record. I think it's a fight that the only way you're not everyone's watching it. The only way you're not paying for it is, you know, to find an illegal stream. But on August 26th, as many people who know that the Super Bowl is on that first week in February are going to know that this fight is on, and they're going to watch. And there's very low expectations, but I think as humans, as sports fans, you feel like you have to be there.
I automatically go to, okay, how will they figure out a rematch? Because there's just too much money involved in this. Am I crazy for thinking that way?
Nope. I mean, like, you know, Floyd just has to win. The longer he can get it to go and the more people think Conor has a chance, the more for a rematch, the more likely it is that there would be a rematch. And, you know, I think that's probably a natural thing. Floyd says this is his last fight, but then again, we know he has some tax issues, which is crazy. And, you know, the layers to this type of story, even for me, I mean, just surreal, that surreal that the crowd in Brooklyn yesterday is chanting, pay your taxes. I never thought that any type of sporting event would be the chant, but it was. And, you know, and no one loves money more than Floyd Mayweather, number one, and Conor McGregor, number two. And this is about money and talking about money and, you know, stories of guys whose careers have revolved around money and no money. I mean, McGregor, you know, 4.5 years transplanted from accepting a $230 welfare check in Ireland.
How do these guys end up with tax problems? Have you figured that out yet? Or, I mean, is it just they're making so much money that they're not paying attention to what they owe?
Generally, I think it's they surround themselves with not the best people. I mean, they don't need to pay attention to what they owe if they know someone who knows what they owe. I mean, but you know, but it seems like Floyd doesn't know how taxes work. I mean, his response to that there was a lien for $22.2 million of taxes in 2015 was, I already paid 26.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But you made about $260 million. You know, conservatively, you had $90 million in taxes to pay. So I'm not sure where you are, but it doesn't seem like you understand how taxes work.
ESPN business reporter Darren Revelle with us. Lonzo Ball has been interesting. I know it's been all over your Twitter feed, but when he comes out wearing the Nike shoes and has the triple-double or scores 36 and 11, and is he jeopardize? Should he have a sneaker deal already? I mean, is that something that you will he never recoup that money?
Oh, he will. I don't think that's lost. The one time that he doesn't recoup his money is under this scenario. This is what I believe the numbers were. I believe that he was offered in the range of a 5-year, $10 million deal by the Adidas's, Nike's, Under Armour's of the world. I think once it was clear that the Lakers were going to pick him number two and the Lakers got that number two pick, I think that went as much as, you know, maybe $15 million. The only way he doesn't recoup that money is if he's not good at all, which I clearly don't think is the case. I have often advocated for some of these rookies to take a risk and not sign a long-term deal if they believed in themselves. And essentially that's what he's done, although obviously it's for the big baller brand. But again, the twists and turns and complexity of this story, who would have thought that 3 games in, you would start auditioning other shoes? And I don't think anything by accident. I think it is all premeditated. I think, you know, his next game, he could come out with the Under Armour Steph Curry. I don't know if that's good overall for the big baller brand, but, you know, I still think he can get the deal or a greater deal than he would have gotten before.
His dad has, a lot of people, myself included, are just nauseated hearing from dad, but clearly his profile's been raised even with the negativity by it. Is dad a good ambassador for the brand, or do you as a business guy go, man, if he would just be quiet and Lonzo plays, he's worth more?
No. LeVar, from a business standpoint, LeVar's amazing. I'm not going to evaluate how he is as a father and putting pressure on his son and that kind of thing. I mean, not that I'm a cold person, but what I do is evaluate capitalists, and he's really good at getting attention. I mean, he is skilled, and by the way, what also makes him is the hate that people have for him. Yeah. I mean, any time I write about LeVar Ball, the anger towards him, there is more anger towards LeVar Ball now than there's anger towards LeBron or KD. There's more anger towards LeVar Ball than Gordon Hayward in Utah or Paul George in Indiana. LeVar Ball is just this lightning rod, and in the social media world, that's worth money.
Darren Revell, ESPN business reporter, mixes sports and business, does it well. FanDuel and DraftKings, they tried, and FanDuel eventually backing out. This a head-scratcher for you, why they even thought they could get away with this?
Yeah, it makes no sense. I mean, you own 90% of the market, and I guess Yahoo could be competitors. Well, they're not. They didn't play in the daily fantasy business. You know, the true money in here now, if you're an investor, is that if you believe that gambling is going to be legal, sports gambling will be legal in this country in 5 years, those guys have the databases and they have the back-end analytics and back-end software to basically run that system and compete with the gaming industry, the Caesars Palaces, and the guys that are and the MGMs and the Cantor Gamings to come up with the best kind of platform. And that's where the money is, because obviously it's not the business it once was when they were ramming a commercial down our throat every 2 seconds.
Portland would love to get another major league team here, and the NFL feels like a pipe dream. NHL would work. Major League Baseball is interesting. They've had the tribal casinos offer to subsidize a stadium and build a stadium. The city has been unwilling to do that. How would baseball feel about, you know, a gambling entity building a stadium that a potential team that was looking to move 5 or 10 years from now would move to? Do you think the paradigm is shifting towards the acceptance of gambling with Fantasy League, or no?
It depends on how much that gambling institution expects to get back and whether that's in the stadium or not. If it's in-stadium advertising, then I think it's totally fine. If it's betting kiosks within the venue, I don't think that's going to fly. But money is getting harder and harder to get, I guess, until the Vegas Raiders got that ridiculous deal. but, you know, and by the way, now that the numbers have come out for the expansion Amazon Echo station, you know, that these guys are paying $675 and $378 each. You know, you think any NFL owner would have fought for the cities to remain where they were? I mean, it's a joke.
Darren Revelle with us. Before I cut you loose, you're at the All-Star game. You tweeted out the numbers of the viewers for the Home Run Derby and the game. Looks like that Home Run Derby may be the most popular thing baseball's got going.
Yeah, I think it outrated the Pro Bowl. I mean, I know the Pro Bowl's not anything great, but it is football. It is baseball beating football. Unfortunately, I think the next day, the All-Star game undid everything that was great. I mean, they really did some nice things. I like the head-to-head. I like the distance giving you a timeout. I like the fact that it wasn't outs and it was time. There was just two guys taking too many balls the last time. They made some really nice tweaks. I mean, better tweaks than the NBA's made with the dunk contest. I give them a lot of credit, but, man, they got to get those pitch clocks going now by the end of the year because, you know, baseball at 3 hours and 7 minutes average game, it's not going to make it. It's not going to make it.
You collect checks from interesting transactions for famous people. What have you collected lately that is interesting?
I lost something that got me angry.
What happened?
I lost the 1986 Mike Tyson fight check. I had never seen a fight check before from Tyson. And it was against Marvis Frazier. I think it was one of his 40-second fights. And it's for $75,000. It had nice writing on it, like it deducted the $5,000 advance they gave him. It was a really nice check. And, you know, part of this is knowing when to stop. And I was at like 600 and the guy wanted 1,000. And I said, I'm out. Don't know if he sold it to anyone, but I passed.
But you're thinking about
really
it now.
Really nice check, though.
You're thinking about it right now. You might circle back.
Yeah, I might. I mean, hopefully he's not listening. Hopefully he's not in Portland.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a cool little thing, and I like doing it. Luckily, I like reporting on the collecting industry, and that even gets my Jones going instead of spending money. And
yeah.
What's going on right now with Aaron Judge is just insanity.
I heard from a guy, we did a thing on Monday on the show where I said, all right, call in and tell me something you've done that nobody else has done, right? And nobody else that's going to call in is going to say they all have also done. And a guy called in, he was a kid, and the Blazers won the championship in 77. He went to the parade, and Bill Walton, during the parade, is riding in the back of a convertible, throws the game ball into the crowd, like just launches it into the crowd, and the kid that caught the ball calls in and says, I have the basketball. I have the ball that Walton threw into the crowd. I mean, what a cool little memento as a kid.
That's a cool item. I have a free. I have, like, someone says, what's the, you know, I'm a Northwestern, crazy Northwestern fan. That's the only team that I root for, you know, now basketball more football, but then obviously basketball's gotten more interesting, though I probably watched 95% of basketball when we were horrible. My weirdest item I have two very weird items. I have Darnell Autry's final class schedule, which he did when he turned pro. He went to the registrar, and I just, for some reason, I was right in front of him, and they called my name and his name, and he knew he wasn't taking classes, so he just left it, and they called his name, and I picked up his schedule. I have that. And the other one I have is when Pat Fitzgerald became the all-time winningest football coach at Northwestern. At some point during the game, he was very angry, and he slammed down the headset, and he broke the headset. And I have the broken headset from when he became the, you know. So, couple weird items. No teeth or any body parts or anything like that.
Nothing crazy like that. Darren Revelle, you're the best. He's a great follow on Twitter. Thank you for making time for us, as always.
Anytime for you.
All right. Darren Revelle, ESPN Sports Business Reporter. What do you have in your collection? I've got a friend who has Akili Smith's mouthpiece. It's true. Killy Smith, after a game, threw it into the crowd. Kid caught it, kept it, put it in a Ziploc bag and attached it to his wall. No, he doesn't walk around wearing it, I don't think. What weird item have you collected? 503-417-7575. I mentioned Michael Jordan's final game when he was playing for the Washington Wizards. This is a regret I have. So Jordan was playing for the Wizards, playing his final game in Portland, and he was kind of doing the farewell tour thing. And as he left the court at what was then the Rose Garden Arena, he came through the tunnel towards the visiting locker room, and I was in the tunnel. And Jordan came through the tunnel, and he had gum in his mouth. And he took the chewing gum, and he stuck it on the side of the trash can as he came through the tunnel. And I looked at it just for just a half a second, like, how weird would it be for me to grab the chewing gum that Jordan had in his mouth, stick it in a Ziploc bag, and be like, hey, I got Jordan's chewing gum. But I thought better of it, and I thought, that's a weird thing for me to, there's a weird thing for me to grab. That would be weird. But, like, what do you have in your collection that you go, man, this is a little weird, but come on and share it. This is a safe place. Do you have Chip Kelly's visor? Share it. Joe's in Oregon City. The number is 503-417-7575. Joe, what do you have?
Well, this isn't exactly a sports-related collection, but since this is such a kid-friendly program,
yeah,
I thought you'd get a kick out of it. My oldest daughter, who's about 37 now, when she lost her first tooth, she did like a lot of kids did, put it under her pillow for the tooth fairy, and she got 50 cents. Well, she wasn't too thrilled with that because she knew that that wasn't the going rate, and she thought that tooth fairy was too cheap, so she kept every single one of her teeth as they fell out and never put another tooth under her pillow.
That's what the tooth fairy gets when the tooth fairy's cheap, Joe, in Oregon City. You get a kid who's collecting teeth. She's probably a commodities broker now. Mike's in Beaverton. Mike, what do you have?
I have something that I thought was really rare, and then it turned out not to be really rare. So I was cleaning out a couple of drawers a couple of years ago, and I opened up this folded up piece of paper, and it was a mimeograph stat sheet from a Blazer-Laker game. And I thought to myself, why did I keep this? I remember going to the game, but why did I keep it? I turned it over, and on the back, Wilt Chamberlain's autograph.
Wow, see, that's something.
And that's what I thought. I go, wow, this is something. And I went to see how much it might be worth, just because. It's worth about $5 because Wilt Chamberlain signed everything.
Yeah, you know, he did a lot of things, that Wilt Chamberlain. A lot of Wilt Chamberlain spread around. Michael's in Beaverton. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John. So it's not what I have, but it's what I could have had.
Okay.
So about 10 years or so ago, I was working at a local golf course here in the Portland area. And, you know, it's early morning, summertime, and this limo pulls up. And out of the limo pops Tiger Woods. And so he apparently was on the course for a few hours testing out some new clubs for Nike. Gets done. I see him pull up in his cart. He's heading out. I grab the cart to move the cart around to where we got to take it when he's done. In the back little basket of the cart is his sweater. And I had the sweater in my hand, thought about keeping it. Really thought about keeping it and ended up tracking his people down and handed it back to him.
That was the right thing to do because what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Right.
Yeah, frame it and be like, I got his sweater. What, did you date him? You know,
right,
it's
right.
Like, Michael and Beaverton, you're honest person. Thank you for sharing that. What do you have? What did you collect that may be a little off the wall? 503-417-7575. Plus, McGregor Mayweather talk next.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
This Mayweather-McGregor thing, it's got some staying power. I know it's not real sport. Okay, it's like when we're sitting around and we ask which animal is going to beat which animal if they go into an elevator together. What do you got, the crocodile or the snake? You have the elephant or the giraffe? You take a jaguar or do you take a rhino? It's why we watch like those National Geographic things on YouTube. Everybody wants to see this. Mainstream America wants to see this fight. Floyd Mayweather is 49-0. He is one of the best defensive boxers ever. Conor McGregor has never fought in a professional boxing match. And August 26th will be his first fight as a boxer. And the promotions people understand that this is not about real competition in a real sporting event. In the BFT jury segment, we will kick this around here momentarily, but I want to set this up by talking about whether or not this is, well, let me hear it for yourself. Floyd Mayweather, you get the first blow.
I ain't back down for no body. You line him up and I knock him down like bowling pins. And August 26th, I'm going to knock this out too.
Floyd Mayweather talking. Here's more.
And I'm guaranteeing you this. You going out on your face or you going out on your back? Now, which way you want to go? Which way you want to go? That's right. Sit quiet, you little...
Conor McGregor. Floyd Mayweather. Everybody weighing in on this. Dana White weighing in on this.
Floyd, traditionally, if you want to say there's ever been a kink in the armor with that kid, it's with southpaws. And Conor McGregor is an absolute knockout artist. When he hits you, you go. So it's part of the fun of this fight. Is Conor McGregor in a 12-round fight going to be able to touch Floyd Mayweather?
There it is. And Bill Reeder of CBS Sports Radio, he also thinks McGregor's got a shot if...
We do know he's got a lot better chin than people expect and than Mayweather's probably used to because he's also getting shot in the face in the UFC time and again. So if he can handle a little bit of Mayweather's counterpunching and abuses, yeah, like McGregor getting really aggressive and getting in there, I think it ups his odds to get lucky and to bring out that puncher's chance opportunity.
Puncher's chance opportunity. How about Mike Tyson weighing in on boxing? Mayweather, McGregor.
That sounds so ridiculous, but I'm going to watch it. Conor don't stand a chance boxing with Floyd. With an MMA fight, you got to use all of your skills. You got to do your legs, your knees, your elbows. And in boxing, you just use your hands. And I think Floyd's going to just be more superior with the hands.
It's you got to use your earlobes. You got to use, You don't use your earlobes, use your teeth. Like in boxing, you're only supposed to punch. But Mike, for Mike Tyson to say that in, it's ridiculous. Like I get what he's saying and I agree with him. But for this is where the whole thing falls apart for me.
That sounds so ridiculous, but I'm going to watch it. Conor don't stand a chance boxing with Floyd. With an MMA fight, you got to use all of your skills. You got to do your legs, your knees, your elbows. And in boxing, you just use your hand.
Also, you can bite the guy's ear off if things aren't going your way. Like Tyson left that part out. Everybody's saying the same thing. That they will watch. It's not, hey, I'm going to win this thing or lose this thing, but that they'll watch. How about Kevin Ioli?
MMA fighters have to defend way more things than boxers. So they can hit more than a boxer because they're not in the perfect position to defend. So that doesn't mean that they're not good athletes or they're not good fighters. It means that they are in a different sport than boxing. And Mayweather has been doing this all his life, and he's going to destroy McGregor because he is the best there is at it, and McGregor's just starting out.
All right, so here's my question for you. I think you're going to watch this. I think, like, the Super Bowl, people will throw parties. They will have the game on. You'll go out to places where the pay-per-view is. It will break records. And millions of Americans will watch it. But this McGregor-Mayweather fight, is it built on true sport? Meaning, in true sport, we're looking for man versus himself or man versus the other man. Or is it totally built on hype and the Kardashian fame and also the idea that the promotion of this fight is all about, hey, let's throw a ridiculous event together and get these guys into the ring. What I'm asking you is, are you buying this as real sport or is it spectacle? 503-417-7575. It's the subject of our BFT jury.
Spanning the city in search of sports fans willing to explore the constant variety of sports and opinion. These sports freaks are prepared to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the bald-faced truth.
What are you going to say?
This isn't 12 angry men stuck in a jury room. It's Boulder.
Kindly address this court as your honor.
What are you Welcome, the Bald-Faced Truth Jury.
I want to know what my producer is going to say about this. Is it sport or spectacle? What are you going to say?
It's a spectacle.
Why?
Because, I mean, you're taking two guys from different sports, essentially. Of course I'm going to watch it, but, I mean, it's guys from two totally different sports. So I don't really see how, I mean, it's like taking, you know, a basketball player and a baseball player and putting them through all kinds of different skills competitions or something like that.
Isn't it sport though? Isn't it rooted? That's why I want to know what you're going to say, because before we get to the callers, isn't the pure definition of sport that, like, we want to see what you can do in this situation? Why is it spectacle to you?
Well, it seems more like a show than anything else. I don't really think there's a lot of substance to it. I think it's mostly just two guys, you know, two of the best guys in their sport, obviously, two of the biggest names in their sport. But it seems like a lot more drama and buildup than anything else. I think it'll be interesting to watch, but I don't know that you're necessarily seeing, you know, two guys giving their best skills, because they do two totally different things.
Conor McGregor.
But 20,000 people, it's mind-blowing. I'm absolutely honored to be here before you to give you this great spectacle. And somebody's O has got to go. He's in a tracksuit.
He's in a tracksuit. Conor McGregor. Floyd Mayweather. Sport or spectacle? 503-417-7575. I think it's sport. I think it's inherent in UFC, MMA, and inherent in boxing that a big part of this is promotion. I just can't believe that we've had four straight days of promotion. And the lead promoter, I can't play the clip because he's got profanity all over it, but he essentially said, don't be mad at us. We figured the game out. We figured out a way to take it to the next level. We figured out a way to make it entertaining. And he even said, we're in a society where people want to see this stuff. People watch the Kardashians. He said that. The promoter of the fight said it. Is it sport or spectacle to you, though? Greg's in Portland. Greg, welcome to the show.
Yeah, John. Yeah, this is 100% spectacle, man. I mean, that's pretty obvious. It's basically all about money and publicity. That's not to say that Conor, you know, can't win or doesn't think he can win. Obviously, he thinks he can win, but that's all this is about. I mean, I don't want to go as far as to say that it's like, you know, an NBA team saying, you know, I want to take on the Patriots, you know, but it's kind of along the same lines, but it's all for show. It really is. So,
yeah. Will you watch it? Will you watch it, or are you turned off by it?
I will. Oh, no, I'll be watching it. Like I said, spectacle. It's all for show. And the publicity thing is the reason that everybody's going to watch it. Because a lot of people like me believe, you know, why is this even happening? And then, it's just going to be interesting.
What if McGregor knocks him out? Would that change your mind? Would it then be sport?
I don't think so, no. I think it'll still be spectacle. But I think a lot more people on the Mayweather side will have a lot more respect for McGregor than they do right now.
Appreciate the call. Join the jury at 503-417-7575. Mike's in Vancouver. Mike, sport or spectacle? What do you think?
Well, it's hard to say if you want to call it a sport. It's definitely a spectacle, obviously. But
I think everybody's lying if they're saying that they're not going to watch it. They're going to tell everybody at the office the next that they didn't watch it, but they're lying. My big question is, and I haven't heard anybody ask this, let's just say that McGregor actually wins, okay? Would he defend that title or whatever you want to call it, or does he just walk away from it?
I think he probably stays in it if there's money in it. I mean, I think it sets up a rematch right away. People also were talking about these guys are at each other's throats in the news conferences, and then they share a private plane, like when they're flying away from it. It is a lot of hype. Of course there is. That's promotion. You have Conor McGregor, who's, and it's got this thing. There are obvious, like, there is a UFC MMA versus a boxer thing. There's an American versus an Irishman thing. There's a black guy versus a white guy thing. But people are watching this fight, I think, because we are interested in whether a guy who is regarded as the reigning champion in UFC at his weight and a very high-level performer can fight who we regard an undefeated 49-0 boxer who's a great boxer at the end of his career. Like, it's like literally YouTube. I jump on the YouTube and you can watch the elephant and rhino fight, or you can watch a crocodile fight a lion, and there's a zebra fighting a buffalo on YouTube that has like 2 million hits, 2 million views, and I'm just looking at all this stuff going, why do people watch it? I think it's the same reason why people are interested in this. Is it sport though? Because like some people will say, no, it's total spectacle. I do think there's some sport in this. I am curious to see, not if McGregor can win, because I think Mayweather's going to knock him out. But I wonder, I think he's going to batter him. But I'm wondering how proficient McGregor will look. How long can he hang around? What's his strategy going to be? Because, like, haven't you ever wondered what it would be like for you to jump in the ring against a high-level professional boxer? And I don't know. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Dre is in Portland. Dre, what do you think, sport or spectacle?
Right now, it's a spectacle, but come August 26th, it's a sport. They're both training. Once they get in the ring, it's a sport. Right now, it's a circus. It's a show. But believe me, Floyd's not trying to lose to this dude. And I know Conor's not trying to lose to Floyd. It's a sport come fight night. You'll have two great athletes. Unfortunately, I'm with you. Conor is... He's not quick enough to deal with Floyd. I've seen him get hit in the UFC before by some slow dudes.
Yeah.
He will not be able to touch. He may touch Floyd a little bit, but Floyd is way too quick. In some of the press conferences, especially the first one leading up, Conor looks a little nervous, man. He looks like that dude that's walking around like, okay, this is really about to happen. Floyd is used to this. Money is used to this.
Are you going to watch this thing? You're going to watch it. You have to.
Hell yeah, I'm watching it, man. I'm a money fan. I got so many fights taped on my DVR right now, I can't tape anything else. I love boxing. I love boxing. I know UFC is with it now, and that's the new thing, but a UFC fighter cannot deal with a professional boxer, a high-level professional boxer. It's a different skill set.
Is there part of you, Dre, because you are a boxing fan, that you want this validation, don't you? Because for years we've wondered who would win, you know, if the greatest UFC fighter and the greatest boxer got into the ring together. Does boxing need Mayweather to win this?
I don't think they need Mayweather doing this. And to be honest with you, I kept hoping that Mayweather would not take this fight. He doesn't need this. You're 49-0, man. Why would you stoop down to Conor's level? Money is a mega star. Conor is a star, but money is the guy. He's 49-0. I mean, even if Conor won this fight, which I'm 137% sure that he won't, and he tries to defend this title, who is he going to fight? He's getting whooped by these young dudes. You going to fight Keith Thurman? You going to fight one time? Oh, my God. You going to fight Canelo Alvarez? No way.
We found our expert. We found our boxing expert. There's Dre. Yeah, I'm going to have to watch this fight. Maybe what we should do is we should get the Skype Live Performance Lounge to get the fight. We should hold a spectacle ourselves on August the 26th. Invite in like 75 of our closest listeners. Split the crowd down the middle with UFC fans and boxing fans. I think Mayweather wins this thing. I think he batters. You know, I've watched high-level boxing from ringside. I've been at championship fights. I've been at the Olympic fights. I've even gone to watch the Olympic fights out of curiosity because sometimes I want to see, like, the flyweight guys. Like, a guy who weighs 118. I've often wondered, like, if I fought a guy who weighed 118, could I beat it? And I watch how quick those dudes are. Yeah, they're like 5'3". But, man, I think you'd raise your hands up and it would be like, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. You'd be out. They hit you like six times before you blinked. That's how quick they are. It's quick hands. It's quick feet. Great defense. Skilled boxers. Floyd Mayweather is the wrong matchup for Conor McGregor. I'm going to watch in part because McGregor in his sport, like I was in Vegas not too long ago and we were driving. We got into an Uber and the guy was like, we were talking about McGregor happened to be fighting that night in Vegas. And he was talking about like how the city comes to a crawl when McGregor fights. He was saying, man, it's really slow because there is a fight going on. Everybody's at home watching McGregor fight, everybody in Vegas, or they're in a lounge that has the fight on pay-per-view, or they were at the fight itself, which was, I believe, in Vegas. So McGregor was fighting and the Uber driver was going, man, nobody's out right now. I was out trying to get to another casino. But he was like, the city shuts down because Conor McGregor is like the star in this sport. I think Mayweather's too good for him. Even at the twilight of his career, on his way out the door, tax problems or whatever. I think it's the wrong matchup for Conor McGregor. And I think Conor McGregor, if he were smarter, would he be better off fighting like a tune-up fight for this? Or is the right approach, because once he gets into the ring with a boxer, people are going to go, oh, he's not a boxer. Is the right approach for him to just bite off the whole, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You know, you don't start by eating a mouse. Is this the right approach for him to jump into the ring against a guy who's 49-0 and regarded as one of the best defensive fighters of all time? The one thing that'll tick me off is if I shell out for the pay-per-view and I make like, you know, the guacamole, the bean dip, we have like gliss over, you know, that's why I asked you off the top of the segment. I want to know where you stand on this. What are you going to say? I want to know that because I'm dying to know if you're interested in this at all, Gliss, because to me, it's like, I think we should dedicate more of the show maybe next week and the week after to talking about this. Jamie's on 205. Jamie, join the conversation.
Hey, you know, I know a lot of people are talking about this Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight, but to be honest, the fight everybody needs to be talking about right now is GGG Canelo Alvarez. That could arguably end up being one of the greatest fights in history, and no one is talking about it because this sideshow, it's kind of becoming a joke almost.
Do you think that it's been bad for boxing that this has overshadowed everything else that's going on in the sport? Alvarez is 49-1.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, you got two of the best fighters in the world. Granted, Floyd Mayweather beat Alvarez already, but he beat Alvarez when he was like 22 years old. So he wasn't even in the prime of his career yet. Alvarez would run tables around Floyd Mayweather right now. I'm not saying that Floyd Mayweather isn't one of the greatest fighters ever, but bottom line is he couldn't stand six rounds in the ring right now with Canelo. And don't even get me started about GGG. That dude's got the strongest hands arguably ever.
Strongest hands ever, strongest columnist in the state. I go head-to-head with Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard next.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
got some Mariners tickets, and I'm going to give away. I'm going to do it at about 2:05, and I'm going to do it a little differently. If you listen to this interview that I'm about to do with Austin Meek, the columnist of the Eugene Register-Guard, I'm going to ask you a question about it at 2:05, and if you have the correct answer, basically, if you're paying attention, you have any kind of comprehension, you will be uniquely qualified to win the tickets. So give yourself an advantage and stick around and listen to this interview that I'm about to do with Austin Meek, the great columnist at the Eugene Register-Guard. He joins me now. How are you, man?
Hey, John, I'm good. How are you?
What are you doing today? What's a summer day like in Eugene for the columnist there?
You know, I'm just kind of minding the store today. Everybody else is on vacation, so it's a little lonely, and I'm just keeping tabs on things today.
College football practice starting in a week. You excited about that, or will you wait till September, late August, September, to get into it?
You know, I love college football season. I love that feeling in the air when football's around the corner. I don't necessarily love the 6 weeks of buildup that come before that. I cut that in half, I'd be pretty good with it. You know, about the middle of August, I'm like, okay, we've been over the depth chart, we've talked to the coach, we've done the preseason poll, let's get to the games. It gets a little bit monotonous for me.
One of your recent columns after the 4th of July caught my attention. I laughed so hard. The Emeralds had their 4th of July game like everybody else who shoots off fireworks, except for one thing, at PK Park, they had a 20-inning game.
Yeah, well, everybody loves a good minor league fireworks fiasco to begin with, and it's just, you know, it's such rotten luck for them that it's the one day a year that they play 20 innings, it's the 4th of July. You know, they spend all this money on this fireworks show. It's the biggest thing they do all year. They're really proud of it. You know, city ordinance, they can't do it any other time except the 4th of July. So they've got all these fireworks. They're all set up, ready to light the fuse. The game goes till 1 in the morning. They're like, what do we do now? They decided just to shoot them off as fast as they possibly could, which I think the reasoning was, let's get it over with. But if you're sleeping in the vicinity of PK Park and you hear a 15-minute fireworks show happening in about 5 minutes, it sounds like the blitzkrieg going on. So it ended up being kind of a funny story.
Why not shoot them off between innings? Did they consider, like, all right, it's the bottom of the 14th, let's shoot a few off here, a few there? Does a fireworks show not the same if you spread it out over many innings?
You know, that is a possibility that I had not considered. I know they tried to stop the game and just do the fireworks show in its entirety and then resume the game afterwards, but the umpires wouldn't let them do it. Now, I've never seen a fireworks show spread out like that, just, you know, one or two at a time between innings. That would have been a new approach to it.
I was in my front yard. It was not last night, but the night before. I'm in the front yard, and it's about 8 o'clock. And all of a sudden, I hear thump. And I look to my left, and like a half a block away, boom, like the firework. Like, it must have been some guy who had leftover, and he must have been by himself being like, what am I going to do, store this thing in my garage for a year? He just sets it off, and it scared the crap out of me. Like, did you hear the fireworks, that 5 minute show? How loud was it?
No, I didn't. Yeah, no. I didn't hear it. We live quite a ways away from the park, so I didn't hear it. Although there were people not too far from us who said that they did. See, in my book, it's like the 4th of July is the one night a year when everybody gets a pass to be an idiot. And even if it's 2 in the morning, okay, it's your night, set them off. But then after that, it's done. You know, I don't want to hear it on July 6th. You know, I don't want to hear it on June 30th. You get one night to be an idiot with the fireworks, and then it's done.
I got an idiot in my neighborhood, apparently. We're talking to Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard. You got a chance to go see the A's and Mariners, and in particular, the University of Oregon is not known as a baseball school, but you wrote a little bit about Oregon as a baseball school. How far away are they from really making inroads with some players?
Well, they got a couple guys, and they've got more on the way. So they're starting to get a little momentum. It's taken a while, you know, a decade into the return of the program, and they don't really have an established major leaguer, although Ryan Healy is, I think, on his way to being that. Came up last year with the A's, hit really well for half a season. He's hitting pretty well this year. His power numbers are up. He's in the middle of their lineup. They got another guy, Tyler Anderson, who's pitched for the Rockies. He's hurt right now. But then they've got some guys, you know, at the AAA level who are knocking on the door. With David Peterson being a first-round pick, you know, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on him with the Mets. How quickly can he get up? You know, he's probably the guy you would point to right now and say he's got the potential to be a, you know, maybe a top-of-the-rotation type guy if everything comes together for him. So they finally do have some guys starting to filter in now, but it's taken them a while. It's been a long drought for Oregon in the majors.
I saw in your piece it had been 29 years between big league players. That's ridiculous. Like, and I get it, Oregon didn't have a program, but still, you would think like 29 years. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's kind of a, you know, kind of a obscure bit of trivia that the before Scott McGuff 2 years ago, the last Oregon player in the majors was Tom Dodd. 1986, and I think he got like 13 at-bats for the Orioles. So, you know, the two guys who bookend that long drought were not exactly memorable major leaguers either.
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard columnist with us, Associated Press Sports Editors column winner from this last year, multiple prize winner. You, in the summer, do you find it harder? Because I feel like I have to work harder in the summer to find column subjects, to find things that I think our readers care about. Do you feel the same way, or do you like that pace in the summer that's a little more liberal?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. The summer's tough. It's just, you know, the summer is when I try to look for more of the off-the-beaten-path type stuff, which is, you know, it's good to be able to change gears a little bit, give people something different. But you know, in Eugene, it's just everything is so driven by the U of O. People are interested in U of O sports year round. That's what really drives the bus. So in this, you know, little intermission here, between the end of track season and the start of football season, not a lot going on with the Ducks. There's always stuff here and there, but, in general, those things that you can depend on as column topics aren't really there in the summer. So, it's nice to have a little change of pace, but, that's one reason why I enjoy the return of football season. Because there's always some interesting stuff to write about the first weeks of football.
I want to talk to you about football for a second here. Jim Leavitt, the defensive coordinator at Oregon. We spent a lot of time focused on Willie Taggart and people talking about Taggart and recruiting and all that. But what have you seen out of Jim Leavitt that you like, or maybe what comes to mind if we're just talking about Jim Leavitt?
Man, Jim Leavitt is a character. I remember Jim from when he was an assistant at Kansas State. You know, I went to Kansas State. I grew up around there. I followed that program really close. He was one of Bill Snyder's assistants, loves Bill Snyder, adores Bill Snyder, wants to be the coach there when Bill Snyder retires, gets a lot of his philosophy and how he coaches from Bill Snyder, although obviously personality-wise they're quite different. I don't think there's anybody personality-wise that's really comparable to Jim Leavitt, but he learned a lot from Bill. You know, when he built that program at South Florida, he was coaching out of a trailer. They didn't have facilities. He started the program from scratch and built it into a pretty competitive program. You know, he's kind of a weird dude. He's wired different than anybody I've ever been around. But he's incredibly passionate about what he does. And that comes through when you watch him coach. You know, I think if anybody can get the best out of the talent that Oregon has on this defense, he's probably a guy who could do it.
What about the personnel he inherits? Is it possible that Mark Helfrich, the defense could not have been worse. So I guess if Helfrich had stuck around, at least defensively, they probably would have been better regardless. But how much better can Leavitt be with Helfrich's guys and a Pagano kid who's a transfer mixed in and everybody else a year older?
Yeah, you know, I still don't see it in the front seven. I don't see the bodies up there to really make a huge leap defensively. You know, when Oregon's defense is they were never great over this last stretch with Markelle Fritch and, you know, before that with Chip Kelly. They were never great, but when they were good enough, Oregon usually had some guys. You know, they had DeForest Buckner, who was a top 10 pick on the defensive line. They had Eric Armstead. They don't have those guys. They haven't had those guys, you know, and so you take a defense that wasn't great to begin with, and then you subtract, you know, the guys who really made it work. That's problematic. And I still don't see it. You know, the linebacker group was not good last year. And I just, you know, I think they can take a step forward. I think they do have some talent in the secondary, but that front seven still scares me.
I look at the schedule and I see Cal as that opening conference game for Willie Taggart. That's a pretty nice setup for him, like, you know, getting off to that start. What else has to happen in the early part of the season for Willie Taggart to get momentum?
Well, I think they need to establish what they're going to be all about. I think they need to have some kind of identity that takes shape. Because it's going to be different from what it was. And I don't know that we really have a sense for that yet. You know, we've heard about the Gulf Coast offense that Willie Taggart ran at South Florida. And we've watched how his South Florida team played. Seems like it's a team that, you know, looking at South Florida, that like to run the ball right at you, a physical team. You know, gave you some different looks, would still spread you out, but really wanted to, you know, hit you right between the eyes. Is that going to be the identity for Oregon? I think the personnel probably lends itself to that. I've got an offensive line that I think can be pretty physical. Got a running back group that should be pretty good, and Royce Freeman leading the way. So I think it'd be pretty crucial for Oregon in those non-conference games just to establish a little bit of identity, let people know what they're going to be all about.
I totally agree with you, too, because I think what Willie Taggart has done, and I think masterfully, he's recruited and he's talked. We all know what his voice sounds like, and we know, like, do something is the mantra there. But I think unless we see a team that plays that way, it's just kind of people talking. It's like when Markelle Fritch used to say, we're Oregon, this is the way we're going to do things. And then we'd watch them run around and kind of look disorganized and not very disciplined and fractured and didn't play defense. And we went, okay, what is that, just talk? I think there has to be that transfer. Is there a player in particular that you're excited about seeing play this next season?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is Justin Herbert, just because we know what he can do. But I'm interested to see what he does in the context of Willie Taggart's program versus Markelle Fritch's. You know, the talk has been that, you know, Justin has really taken a step forward over the summer. He's going to come back bigger and stronger and more of a leader and all that stuff that everybody says over the summer. But I'm just really curious to see how Willie Taggart molds the team around Justin and how Justin adapts to what Willie wants to do. And, you know, I think you're right in terms of Willie Taggart. You know, one of the things about him is I don't know that we really know what his football philosophy is. You know, we know his personality. We know the do something and, you know, the juice and all the stuff he's been talking about. But football wise, like, you look at his teams and, you know, he tried to do the pro style thing and then he scrapped it. And then he went to this offense and, you know, he's the play caller. And, I'm not sure how wedded he is to one particular philosophy. And I guess that's what we're going to find out, you know, is how much is this, the South Florida team that we saw, and how much of this is Willie Taggart sort of reinventing himself now with different personnel at Oregon.
Marcus Mariota made an appearance in the state. He did a signing, autograph signing, and then a charity event. What do you see in Mariota now as he's beginning to mature as a professional?
Well, he's a lot like he was when he was here, you know, personality-wise. For better or for worse, he's not changed a lot. You know, that's a good thing in the sense that he's not one of those guys who gets successful and makes a lot of money and his personality changes. He's impervious to that. But the other side of that is, you know, when he was here, he was a pretty private person, very soft-spoken, and that part has not changed either. You know, he's still every bit as introverted as he was when he was here. I talked to him at his charity tournament. It was the first time they'd done that. Had a bunch of people out. Mark Helfrich was there, bumped into Mark Helfrich. So, you know, Marcus is just what you would expect. If you covered him, if you knew him at all when he was here, you're not surprised by anything he's done at the next level.
Now, back to Helfrich here, though. You kind of buried the lead there. You bump into Helfrich. what was that like to see him? Or is that an awkward – I don't know. Like that, to me, like he was awkward a little bit at a resting state, and I don't know how much of it was his discomfort with media or not wanting to open up. But what's it like to see him after he's been fired and he's hanging out at a charity event?
You know, he seemed really at ease. Talked to him for a couple minutes. He was hopping in a golf cart, but seemed really relaxed. Said life is good. He was there with his brother, seemed to be having a good time, caught up. I saw him catching up with a lot of the boosters, the Mariota family. So, you know, he seemed like a guy who was pretty, pretty at peace with life. It's kind of like, you know, when we talked about it last time, I mentioned that I felt like he was one of those guys who did not need to be coaching to be happy. And just from a very brief interaction, that was kind of the sense I got, that he was pretty happy with his life, even without football.
Was he open to letting you spend some time with him and write a column about life after Ducks football, or was he maybe down the road?
We'll see. Yeah, he was. I got the sense that if I had taken out the notebook, he would have jumped in that cart even quicker than he was. But we'll work toward that.
I always found him to be nice. You know what I mean? Like he was a decent person, a nice person. And then you have to evaluate him as a football coach. And like, I didn't have as kind things to say about him. And I felt like, gosh, like he's in a position. It was almost like watching a guy who was born into a 7-foot body and then going, well, it wasn't his fault that he was born 7 feet tall. And we're all criticizing him because he can't play basketball. I'm watching Helfrich and I'm going, he was a really good quarterback's coach and a decent offensive coordinator, and maybe just not a head coach.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. It's in his shoes, if you're Mark Helfrich and you're 39 years old and they offer you a chance to be the head coach at the University of Oregon, like, what are you going to do? You're not going to say no. Like, he had no choice. You got to take the job. But I never felt that he was totally comfortable, though, in that role. It was like he was fulfilling something that was put upon him more so than, you know, doing something that he was really meant to do. I always thought that, you know, if he wasn't the coach at Oregon, he was the type of guy that you could have had a really good relationship with. I think, you know, just as a guy, he would have been pretty easy to get along with. But I think there were certain sacrifices he made, you know, understanding what the job is like, and just, you know, certain things as the coach at Oregon, he just didn't think he could do. And one of those was interacting a lot with the people who covered the team.
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard. Read him online at the Eugene Register Guard and follow him on Twitter. Austin, thank you.
All right. Thanks, John. Have a good weekend.
Good stuff from Meek. I'm going to take a nugget of that interview, and it will be your opportunity to win a pair of Mariners tickets in the next segment of radio. So if you listen to that interview with Austin Meek, stick around and see if you might be two tickets to the Mariners-Yankees series coming up, two tickets richer. That's in the next segment of radio coming up in front of us. Plus, later in the show, we will talk about we did a bit earlier where we were talking about funny and crazy things that you collected. I have been receiving a lot of Twitter activity about that, and people who have called in and held for now just about an hour waiting to share with us what it is that they've collected. We will continue some of that. Plus, we'll give you In the Wake of the Week and a departure. We've had a member of this radio show who has, you know, basically competed at a high level that I'm not happy with. I will publicly dismiss a guy on the show who has done some good things. in the next half hour to 45 minutes of radio on this station that you're listening to. So leave it here, because your fired moment is ahead of us.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Did you listen to the interview that we did with Austin Meek, or I did with Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard just a moment ago? If you did, you were uniquely qualified to win a pair of Mariners tickets. The Bronx Bombers visit Safeco Field July 20th through the 23rd. There's no better way than to spend a summer night at the ballpark. So call right now for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Mariners take on the Yankees on Saturday, July 22nd. You can get tickets at Mariners.com. But here's the deal. I'm going to ask you a question about the Austin Meek interview. So if you didn't hear the interview, you're probably not going to win. 503-417-7575. It's a number. You're going to have to answer a question. Basically, if you're paying attention during that interview, you got a shot. And I'm not going to ask the same question over and over, because I think people who are well-versed in this will be sitting on hold going, hey, let's Google this. But did you listen? If you listened and you were paying attention, you're going to have a shot to win. In the wake of the week is ahead of us. In the meantime, I gotta kick somebody off the show. Curtis Rogers, who has two first names, has performed mostly at a high level, except for the moment in which he revealed that he's leaving the show, at which point I said, you're fired. What's going on, Curtis Rogers? Where are you going, man?
I'm going to Seattle, which I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of people in Portland, but born and raised up there, so I get to go home, and I'll be continuing to do radio up there, and part of my new role. We'll be doing stuff with the Mariners pre and post game show.
Are you going to talk on air?
Yeah, I'll be hosting the Mariners pre and post game show eventually here, and then also.
So will we hear you on certain stations? Will we be able to catch you?
Yeah, on
the Portland market,
right here on 102.97.50 The Game.
Okay.
So I'll still kind of be around.
And for people who didn't know, the contributions of Curtis Rogers, even if you're listening on the BFT Radio Network on Fox Sports Eugene, you are getting his work, because you're basically at the air traffic controls during all shows of all network here.
Oh, yeah. I'm everything that goes over the air goes through me.
Well, I'm told that there is a audio clip of you that we should play, but I don't have it because my production staff today is too busy Jimmy jacking around. It's not available to me. So we're going to go out to the phone lines, and we will take phone calls from people trying to win Mariners tickets. See, that's what happens. The minute you are leaving, everybody starts jerking around, having water balloon fights or doing whatever. But, you know.
They're flustered. I got to get them back on track here.
We were going to do something mean to you on your last day, because we were going to have a lady come in and massage you. But the twist, and we've done this before, is the lady who does the massaging only uses her feet.
Really?
Yeah. So we had talked about getting her to come in and give you a massage on air, which you were very excited about, right?
Sure, yeah.
But she does it. You lay on the floor. She gets barefoot, and she puts oil on her feet, and then she just walks all over you. Does that sound good to you?
Not as appealing. Not as appealing as just, you know, a regular standard operating procedure massage. I would hope she's not like huge, because I wouldn't want to have my back blown out or anything like that on my way out. But
yeah,
that would be something else.
This is how good the production people are today. They're making me hunt it down. I have to hunt this piece down.
We got it.
Put it in my folder.
It's in your folder.
It's not in my folder.
All right. I'll resave it in your folder. You it's in Adriana's folder.
There. Now it's in my folder. All right. So tell you what, Curtis, you got room in your car? Take some other people with you?
I'll have one seat available in my car.
By the way, so you got to Portland.
Yeah.
You moved from Seattle to Portland.
That was a big part of my story here.
Yeah.
Is within a couple of weeks of moving down here, I got my car stolen and most of my possessions. Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
But it all turned out well. Found my car. Insurance deemed it a total loss, but got a very, very nice check, which I used towards a new car, or at least new to me. So I'm driving around.
You're driving around on an upgraded ride.
Yes, a much better ride.
So this didn't all end. You got a happy ending after all.
I did.
Unlike that massage that we had.
Oh, whoa.
All right. This was a, Adriana put this together. And this is, I guess, a tribute to your finest work here on the station. Here is some of what Curtis Rogers, people in Portland heard this. People in Fox Sports Eugene not getting your updates. But this is how good Curtis Rogers is with words. He's a wordsmith. He's Shakespeare. Eloquent, polished, smooth.
So long, farewell to you, my friends. Goodbye for now, until we meet again.
It's 2 o'clock in downtown Portland. I'm Curtis Rogers with your sports desk update. The Timbers welcomed in supporters, Shield leaders, the Chicago Fire tonight at Providence Park with Captain Liam Ridgewell sidelined now for 6 to 8 weeks. Portland head coach Caleb Border says it's not an ideal situation, but his guys are adjusting well to it. Just before 2:30 in downtown Portland, I'm Curtis Rogers with your sports desk update. The NBA hot stove. It's lit, fam. Yahoo Sports is reporting the Timberwolves and Jazz are nearing a trade that would send veteran point guard Ricky Rubio to the Jazz. The big rumor now is Minnesota is gearing up for .com. Up next, more of the best. Actually, this is a live version of the Ball Face Truth. What am I saying? Don't go anywhere. It's 102.9 and 750. The game. Up next, Jeff Passan, columnist for Yahoo Sports. He's going to go... John Cazzano next, right here on the Bald-Faced Truth. Do not go anywhere. Up next on the Bald-Faced Truth, a former Blazers insider joins John Cazzano next to give you the scoop on just what goes down with Blazers insiders. That's next on 102.9 and 750 The Game. It's lit, fam.
My favorite is, I can't decide, it's either it's lit, fam, like what is that?
That was just me trying to appeal to the youths out there. You know, NBA Hot Stove was, it was raging wild that day, so.
It's lit, fam.
Yeah.
If I just walk around saying that, the kids will think I'm cooler.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
That doesn't make you cooler, just to say it stuff
darn,
like that.
Yeah.
The other one was, we had former Comcast insider Chris Haynes coming on, and I told you specifically not to tease who it was because I figured Comcast might have a vested interest in trying to make sure that Haynes didn't appear on the show. So I told you not to say his name. So you said former Comcast insider talks about what?
I think I said former Blazers insider talks about what it's like to be a former Blazers insider. Just the vaguest possible description.
We got to let you go. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Bring that expertise and that excellence and all of that enthusiasm with you to the Mariners broadcast.
I will try my best.
All right. Curtis Rogers, you were very gifted in what you did. We're going to miss you around here. Big shoes to fill. In all seriousness.
Well, thank you, John.
I hugged you earlier. It was a sincere hug.
I appreciated that hug. And I'm going to miss being around the crew here at 102.9 750. You guys have been just an incredible group to work with. And I'm, you know, definitely going to miss
all
this.
Right, stop.
Okay. All right.
Why am I the only person that's honest outside of Yelp? Like, everybody on Yelp tells the truth. Like, if the restaurant sucks, you people get on and just, you know what? You enjoyed your time here.
It's true. I did.
Got your car stolen.
I did. got off to a rough start, but it picked back up.
All right. We appreciate you. I'll let Adriana and Gliss say their goodbyes as well. And by the way, next time you put a montage together, throw it in my folder so that I have access to it, you know? That's for Adriana, who's not. But like a good producer, Gliss is pointing at Adriana like it's her fault. That's your domain down there. You are the emperor. Yeah. All right. I have a pair of Mariners tickets to give away, and we're going to bring people on. We're going to let them have an opportunity to try to win those tickets. Eric's in Hillsboro. Eric, how are you?
Good. How are you, John?
I'm doing well. You have an opportunity here to win a pair of Mariners-Yankees tickets for Saturday, July 22nd. You must answer one question about the Austin Meek interview. Did you listen to the interview that we had with Meek?
Well, I'll be honest too. I did listen to the first 5 minutes, and then I had to go into the store. So I hopefully get the part that you're talking about.
Okay, so he talked about running into former Oregon Ducks coach Mark Helfrich. Where did Austin Meek run into Mark Helfrich?
Wow, that must have been later in the interview, because I'm just going to take a guess at it. I'm going to say Las Vegas.
Good try. I appreciate you listened. It was not Las Vegas. He ran into him at Marcus Mariota's charity golf tournament. Damn. Missed that part of it. We go on to the next person who has an opportunity to win the tickets. Will's in Portland. Will, how are you, man?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Doing well. Would you have got the Helfrich thing right?
Oh, I would have, and I'm mad that you gave the answer.
Yeah, I see, because what happens in the years past when I've done it like that, the next person just starts Googling or tweeting and asking people. All right, here is the question that you're going to get. Austin Meek mentioned where he went to college. Where did Austin Meek go to college? In the interview, he said it, and he also said that Jim Leavitt had been an assistant coach there.
Let me see. It's the, nope, don't got it.
Damn, he was even listening. Now we are testing your comprehension. Man. Next up, let's go to Greg in Portland. Greg, you got a shot to win a pair of Mariners-Yankees tickets. How are you?
Great. How are you doing, John?
Good. Did you listen to the Meek interview?
Most of it.
Are you paying attention?
Most of the time. I was driving, so I was dual tasking there.
Anytime I'm talking, you got to pull over and listen very carefully. All right. So here's the deal. Austin Meek, I asked him what Willie Taggart's program needs to do in the early part of the season. What did Austin Meek say? And you don't need to get it word for word, but just kind of give me the gist of what Meek said he needs to see from Taggart's program.
He needs to have defense has to be a lot better than it has been the last couple of years.
Dang. 0-3. People were listening. Meek said, I think they need to establish what they're going to be all about. I think they need to have some kind of identity that takes shape because it has to be different than what it was. Boy. Dave is in Portland. Dave, I really want to give these tickets away.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Who are you going to take to the game if you get the Mariners-Yankees tickets?
I think my buddy Rick.
All right. So Rick's future is tied to this as well. I asked Austin Meek about Oregon's defense in particular, to spin off what the last caller said. I asked him, you know, are they going to be better? Are they good? Could they be good? Give me the gist of what Austin Meek said about what he thinks is going to happen defensively.
Okay. He had a lot of concerns about the front seven, and he said there was some talent in the secondary, but reiterated concerns about the front seven.
You, sir, win the tickets. I appreciate you. Were you taking notes?
Thank you.
Did you take notes in the interview, or just careful listener?
No, I too was driving.
There you go. Well, I appreciate you. You're going to the game. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get your information. Thank you for playing. Dave in Portland is the winner of the pair of Mariners tickets. Now I can get rid of that. They give me, when I walk in, they hand me paper. They still hand me paper. and they say, this is what you got to do. And I'm happy to give away tickets. Now, an hour and 24 minutes ago, Ryan in Portland called in because we were asking about weird things that people collect. And I had said that we once had somebody on the station who had Achille Smith's mouthpiece. And I had talked about the ticket stubs that I save and Darren Ravel's collection. He buys old checks, you know, and he pays, you know, $600 to $1,000 for a canceled check. And we're talking about things that you collect. And people began to call in and say, this is what I collect. And thank goodness I didn't peel that gum off of the trash can that was Michael Jordan's gum. When I saw Jordan take gum out of his mouth and stick it on a trash can as he left the court, the Rose Garden Arena. Yeah, because that would have been weird. And also, I would have had gum like sitting in a Ziploc bag somewhere and been like, well, what do I do with this now? Ryan in Portland, an hour and 25 minutes ago now, called in, and he's been holding. Ryan, you finally got your opportunity. Appreciate your loyalty.
Hang on one second. Let me stretch out real quick, John. I got to stretch out, warm up the vocal cords here. It's been a while. You know, I got to tell you, I may have grown up with the person that got Achille Smith's mouthpiece and pinned it up on his wall, a mutual friend of ours.
Yes,
so,
yes.
I applaud our mutual friend. So I've got two things, John, two things that pretty near and dear to my heart. So the first, if you're familiar with the old Coliseum, you know that the concession stands are below concession stands under the arena or behind the visitor's locker room. So my dad and I are getting, you know, popcorn, candy. We're coming back around, and Dennis Rodman had been thrown out of the game. This is when he was in San Antonio, and he screams, S.O.B. And if you remember, Rodman used to wear a finger brace that puts his middle finger and his ring finger together. He threw it, and it slid across the concrete under the stanchion and went right onto my feet. And I picked it up, and I still have that today. It says 10 on it. It's black. That was pretty cool. My dad kind of looked at me, and he goes, well, pick it up. And I said, well, okay, and didn't really quite know what it was then, but I have a piece of Dennis Rodman here with me still.
I love that.
Second thing,
it's such a weird thing, yeah.
Very strange. And second thing, this was probably the coolest thing. You know, I grew up a Blazer fan, obviously, but a guy that was huge back when I was growing up, Sean Kemp. And so a lot like Steph Curry, kids would go pregame, watch Sean Kemp warm up. He would dunk, just put on an absolute show. So I'm down there with a horde of Blazer fans, and I've got my Sonics hat on, and they're trying to get autographs, and he waves me over. And I'm thinking, he's waving me over. I'm 10 at the time, John. He waves me over, and I said, can I get your autograph? I love you, Sonic. You're the greatest, you know. He took off his shooting shirt, his starter shooting shirt, and handed it to me. I still have that today, too. One of the greatest memories of me growing up. He may have been the snowman, John, but he was very, very giving that night, and those are two memories that I'll never forget.
I think you should put on the shooting jersey and the finger guard and go out and shoot some baskets.
I'm done. I'm going to go do it. Beautiful night.
Ryan in Portland. By the way, when you were holding for an hour and 25 minutes, did you think you were ever going to get on?
Well, you know, you helped me pass the time. You know, I'm driving 26 home, so I'm coming from work. And so, you know what, it really wasn't that bad. Listen to the entire interview. But, you know, I would have gotten all three of those questions right. So.
Yeah, you're probably like banging, like, can you please come to me? There's Ryan in Portland with his strange but true connection. It is a weird thing to have. Like, I have a drawer full of stuff that's like that. Like, you can't throw things away because you're like, whatever. But I remember being a kid. I was probably 9 years old. And we had San Jose State season tickets. That's what we went to see. And San Jose State was pretty good. Like, they had Gerald Wilhite, who played the NFL, Gil Bird, Jarris Bird's dad was on that team. Steve Clarkson, who is now a quarterback's guru, was on that team. And they were good. Like, they went 11-1 or 10-2. They beat Stanford one of those years. I mean, that was a good San Jose State team. Jack Elway was the coach, and Claude Gilbert was there. And they had a lot going on. But for me, one of the highlights that I remember that is so obscure and is right in that wheelhouse of like weird things. There was a guy named Rod Traylor who wore number 72, and he was a defensive lineman. Rod Traylor, as he left the field one day, reached up and gave me his forearm pad. Okay, it was just the forearm pad that like a defensive end defensive lineman war.
Get him on the show.
Yeah, we'd get Rod Traylor on. That would be like my highlight guest. Rod Traylor had like played like five games in his whole college career. He gave me that forearm pad. I did not wash it. I took it home. I wore it. And I wore it in the backyard playing fake football. I wore it whenever friends came over. We wanted to play football. It smelled. It stunk. It had sweat on it. It had grass stains on it. It had the number 72 etched on it. So I had that Rod Traylor forearm pad. It was a weird thing. I don't know what became of it, but it's not in my possession anymore. But I want to know what became of Rod Traylor. In the Wake of the Week is in front of us. Leave it here.
I want to shoot, baby. Shoot. Ooh. Right zone, baby. Shoot. No. Not you. You. Shoot.
Here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
That sounds sexy. Here I go again, girls. What's my
name? I give a shout-out to my friends at John's Waterproofing. If you've got a basement problem, if you've got standing water, damp pavement, damp foundation, cracks, even a smell that's not right. We had a house, a rental house that obviously is an investment. It's important to me. It had a wet backyard, and I've talked about this before. The backyard was very wet. And then I noticed underneath the house that there was a little bit of standing water in one corner, and it just was the overall musty smell of things that caused me to call John's Waterproofing. And John's Waterproofing came out, gave us a free estimate, and said, look, here's our plan. And it was a good plan. Encapsulate the crawl space. It will change and protect the air in the house. It will protect the underneath the house. You won't have any standing water. They also put a pump in there that pumped out any water if there was standing water. And, you know, I don't even think about it now because the house smells great and the backyard changed as well. Removing all that standing water caused the backyard to dry out. And so it went from being like mushy around the foundation in the house to being dry and stable. And that's a good thing. They serve the greater Portland area, Salem, Beaverton, Eugene, all the way to Eugene, for people listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Go to bettercrawlspaces.com to get all the information and a free estimate, or call them. You can dial them up and be like, hey, I need some help with this. I heard you on Canzano's show. And if you want to call them, they have an 877 number that is toll free, where you can just call them up and be like, "Hey, we need some help with this." And it's essentially what I did with John's Waterproofing is I just said, "Hey, I'm not sure that this is a fixable problem because I didn't know what I was doing when it came to the crawl space of the house because that's not my thing." So I called them up at 877. 526-8141. That's 877-526-8141. Bettercrawlspaces.com. It's been a great radio show. I hope you have a great weekend planned in front of you. I do. We've got a lot of family in town. We have Camp Exceptional going on next week out at LaSalle High School. Want to give LaSalle some love. I want to give Portland State some love as well. You know what Bruce Barnum, the football coach at Portland State, has done? Bruce Barnum has volunteered a lot of the football team at Portland State to come out and help at the camp. I just said, we need a handful of guys. Do you have any guys that are looking to work with kids and maybe want to help out with the camp? And my brother just sent me a list, like a roster, of all the players at Portland State who have volunteered to help out at the camp all week long. So Portland State, give you some love. I want to give the Hillsboro Hops some love. They always buy into the camp. They send out Barley, the mascot. I want to give the Portland Winterhawks some love. They do it as well. The Timbers and Thorns have supported a long time. And Timber Joey grabbed me at the BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament. And Timber Joey said, hey, when's the camp? Need to make sure that it's on my calendar. So Timber Joey, I thank you for that as well. This brings us to a segment of radio that, or a part of the radio show that we like to call In the Wake, Wake, Wake of the Week, Wake, Wake.
Get him on the show.
Our guest is Chris Haynes of ESPN. He covers the NBA. Chris, when I brought you on, I was talking about journalism and partnerships that teams have with news entities. When you've got a TV partner that is in a partnership with a team, of course, the team is thinking, hey, we're getting favorable coverage. You worked at Comcast Sportsnet Northwest. Is that real with the team looking over your shoulder? Is that a real thing that you're aware of when you're working there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real thing. It's not to the point where, how can I say this? It's not to the point where I'm mute. Like they put me mute, but it is. That's the team partner. They have a relationship. And so, I couldn't write whatever I wanted to write like I did when I left for the Cleveland Flamethrower or what I'm doing at ESPN. So it's something that, I mean, you look at everybody. I mean, just look across the country at the TV partners and look at their beat guys. You just judge them. You judge them how what they're writing about the team, how the favorable coverage is. I mean, that's part of it. You know, I don't think that makes that reporter any less of a reporter, but that's reality.
That's what I say is, like, I don't begrudge people for making a living and working where they need to work. And you, obviously, you came up and that was the job that was available to you. You take it. But it must have felt different to you or better when you leave Comcast Sportsnet Northwest and you go to the Cleveland Plain Dealer where, like, you don't have the GM of the team meeting with your boss going, hey, this was too critical or whatever was said back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, Like I said, John, that stuff goes on, you know, everywhere. You know, that stuff goes on. It happens. It's part of it. And you got to deal with it, and you make the best of it. You try to provide coverage to the fans as best you can under the circumstances. But, it's there. End of the day, it's there.
Get him on the show.
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. Anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
Bull Durham, love that movie. Paul Devlin, who hit that home run, joining us now. Tell us how you ended up in the batter's box that day. The story of how you ended up hitting that home run off Nuke LaLoosh.
Well, I was just finishing up school at North Carolina. I'd used my eligibility up, and I went back for the fall to finish up to a few classes so I can graduate. And somebody said they were doing a baseball movie down in Durham, and somebody made a call over to North Carolina's baseball offices, and they asked for a couple guys, and I was one of them, and I went over there, and it just so happens to be that I was picked for that scene. There was no really rhyme or reason. I just, you know, just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
How many takes do you have to do in a scene like that to get the result that you need?
Well, I tell you what. I hit a double right-handed in another scene, and the cameras were behind Nuke, so he had to actually throw the pitch, Tim Robbins. And in that scene, I mean, he was probably the worst athlete that I've ever seen, in terms of an actor trying to be an athlete. That scene took 17 pitches because he was just all over the place. He was throwing it over my head, behind me, in the dirt. And so, it took 17 tries for that, just to get a pitch over the plate. But that, the scene where I hit the home run, it actually took 4 takes because they used a minor league pitcher to actually throw the baseball. And the funny thing was, I actually had to hit a curveball in that scene, which you probably couldn't tell. There's no way that you could tell. But Ron Shelton, who wrote and directed the movie, he's a former minor league player. He played in AAA with the Baltimore Orioles. You know, he just was so precise with everything that, you know, we had to hit a curveball. So it actually took like 4 takes on that, which was kind of a miracle in itself to get that scene done. So that was just 4 takes, and that was a wrap, and we all went home.
Get him on the show.
All Peyton Pritchard does is win. I like if we're choosing like an intramural team, I gotta have Pritchard. I don't care what sport it is. I don't care if we're playing Monopoly. I'm on his team because all he does is win. Joins us now. What's that like to just win and win and win and win?
You know, it's a crazy feeling, but just, you know, everything I do, I'm just trying to win. And just like you said, Monopoly or anything, I think that's kind of how I was brought up, my family. Losing is not really an option, so just competitive spirit.
I think it's interesting because, like, as parents, I got a bunch of kids in my house. Did your parents let you win at games when you were really little, or did they beat you and make you earn it?
No, they actually never let me win. I remember even playing video games with my dad growing up, playing Madden or 2K or college football back in the day. I swear, we used to get into arguments because he'd always just kill me and he wouldn't let me win, but... So he just made it to where everything I did was, you know, I had to get better.
You're back from how? What was Egypt like?
It was definitely it was incredible experience. Very thankful to be living in the USA after seeing Egypt and, you know, like the poverty and stuff there.
Yeah.
But the basketball side of it, you know, it's, we didn't end up winning gold, which was kind of a disappointment, but it was a good experience. And, you know, going through adversity, I feel like I got better through the whole experience.
You go there as part of the Under-19 World Cup team. What was that like to have, like, USA across your chest and be representing your country?
It's definitely an incredible feeling just to represent your country and to play for your country. But just to go through the whole three-week process with USA and... just to be a part of that, just playing with all those great players, it's a great feeling. It just makes you better.
Get him on the show.
Jeff Passan, great columnist, Yahoo Sports, fantastic reporter. So it's very rare when you get somebody who's a really good reporter who also writes on, like, very strong literature-level writing. He's going to be blushing when he comes on, but he's got both of those skills, and he joins us. How are you, man?
Checked in the mail, buddy.
You've also now been doing some TV, and I've seen you on. You got the makeup on. You're in front of the camera. Are you comfortable? Are you comfortable there?
I'm very comfortable when I have makeup on, let me tell you.
You got a chance to talk to Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball commissioner. What's going on with bats and balls and all the home runs?
I don't think anybody really knows for certain, but here's what we do know. Back in 2014, the number of home runs per team being hit per game was 0.86. Today it is 1.26. So we are almost at a 50% increase in home runs per game over the course of 3 years. That does not happen by itself. And I know there are plenty of things out there. I'm not going to call them excuses, but theories from players and people in management saying guys are trying to hit the ball in the air more, pitchers are throwing harder, and Newton's third law says, you know, as fast as it comes at you, it's going to go back just as fast. I mean, there are all sorts of things, but in the end, for me, it comes down to this. What is the one constant among all players? It's not size. It's not strength. It's not velocity. It's not swing speed. It's the ball. And while there are different parameters that are legal for every ball to be in play and to be allowed and to pass the threshold that Major League Baseball has, they are wide enough parameters where I think that something has gone on with the ball, something that Major League Baseball probably doesn't even know about at this point that's causing this. And we may find out 5 years from now what it was. We may never find out. But ultimately, in my mind, not just being a conspiracy theorist, but just trying to logically deduce as best I can, the ball is the culprit.
Get him on the show.
We're talking to Washington Post columnist Barry Sperluga. He wrote a great column in the Washington Post. For people who haven't read it, off the All-Star Game, it was the best thing written. Barry, thank you for making time.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about baseball's issue with its face. I love that you went in search of, like, an answer on this one. What, first of all, prompted you to write the column?
It's honestly kind of a long-running discussion I've had with Bryce Harper, who, you know, not everybody loves and not everybody feels like handles himself as a baseball
player should or how baseball players are used to being taught how to kind of demure and shun the spotlight and keep your head down while you're around the bases, but don't flip your bat and all that kind of stuff. And Bryce's point from a very young age, and I think that's part of what some people found off-putting about it, was that he was doing it at a young age, is that the sport itself has done a poor job of marketing its stars. You know, we know how the NBA does this, and this is, you know, if it's a Christmas Day game, it's as much LeBron versus Steph as it is Cavs versus Warriors. MLB, I mean, there's some things about baseball that make it harder to put the stars at the forefront, but I also think there are some constraints, and Bryce kind of shares this feeling. There are constraints that are self-inflicted that, you know, kind of some traditions about the game and how players handle themselves that make it hard for their players to really have their flair understood and appreciated and celebrated rather than, hey, man, why did you do that? You know, you're showing up the pitcher. You're attracting attention to yourself. Please stop. That's not how baseball handles things. I think there's a weird kind of in-between area there that baseball has to grapple with.
Get him on the show.
Dale Murphy, 18-year baseball career. You remember him probably with the Atlanta Braves, who played for two other teams. And here was a guy that is a seven-time All-Star, two-time MVP of the league, in the National League, four-time Silver Slugger, and a five-time Gold Glover. Did it all. You become an All-Star at age 24. Did you consider making it, getting it to the big leagues, or making an All-Star game, or winning an MVP, or did you ever have that moment where you go, I've arrived?
Well, the my first All-Star game, no, let me see, 1980, I think when you get a little comfortable thinking, you know, I figured this out, you know, and that I have arrived, I think probably about after my fourth or fifth year, and obviously after one an MVP, you're like, you know, okay, this is pretty big stuff here. But I tried to use it to motivate me to keep me going instead of, you know, just to. I don't think the tendency of most competitive athletes is to relax any, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You can tend to think, well, I figured this out, and so I. It was kind of, you get kind of nervous. It's like, well, what am I going to do next year? I mean, are things going to work out this well next year? So you still always have, there's probably with a lot of athletes, even at the highest levels, there's probably a lot more self-doubt than people would realize. At least that was my case. I was always never comfortable that, okay, I figured this out, that it's, you know, I can dial it in every year. You feel like you're on the verge of, you know, going into a 2-week slump, and then you kind of figure, you know, you forgot how to hit. That's not a comfortable feeling. So I think there's probably, you know, there's just a fine line between really, at least for me, that between really being in the groove and just going out playing and not thinking, being in the zone, I guess you want to call it, and, you know, wondering if you're going to get a hit tonight. I think there's probably a little more self-doubt than people would understand and appreciate for guys playing in the major leagues.
Get him on the show.
The face, voice, words, talent at Fox Sports. He joins us now. How are you, John Morosi?
I am outstanding, John. As always, my friend, far too charitable of an introduction.
Let's talk Cubs. Everybody wants to know if the Cubs can come back from this. The trade, did the Cubs do okay with this?
They did, John. They did. And this trade, of course, today they get Jose Quintana from the crosstown White Sox. Only the second trade between those two teams in this century. So going back to 2000, they had one other one back in 06 involving David Artsma and Neil Kotz. This one is, I think, even bigger than that, I would say, by a wide margin with Jose Quintana. Really, John, to me, one of the prizes of this entire trade market gets moved here just less than 48 hours after the All-Star game is over. And he's going to help address their rotation needs in the near term. They've got both Kyle Hendricks and John Lackey on the DL. He also gives them some insurance because it looks like Jake Arrieta is likely to test the market this wintertime as a free agent, so he can help their 2018 rotation as well. And also, to me, John, this is a nice conversation changer for the Cubs. They had really struggled going into the break. They're now 5.5 games back of the surprising Milwaukee Brewers there in the National League Central. So this is a big jolt of confidence, jolt of positivity for the defending World Series champions as they begin the second half.
Get them on the show.
ESPN business reporter Darren Revelle with us. Lonzo Ball has been interesting. I know it's been all over your Twitter feed. His dad has, a lot of people, myself included, are just nauseated hearing from dad, but clearly his profile's been raised, even with the negativity by it. Is dad a good ambassador for the brand, or do you, as a business guy, go, man, if he would just be quiet and Lonzo plays, he's worth more?
No. LeVar, well, from a business standpoint, LeVar's amazing. I'm not going to evaluate how he is as a father and putting pressure on his son and that kind of thing. I mean, not that I'm a cold person, but what I do is evaluate capitalists. And he's really good at getting attention. I mean, he is skilled. And anyone, and by the way, what also makes him is the hate that people have for him. Yeah. I mean, any time I write about LeVar Ball, the anger towards him, there is more anger.